Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Ian Utile. Ian is probably the most energetic person I know in voice, but he's also a true thought leader for voice and a futurist for where voice is going. And it's really my pleasure today to have Ian on the show. Ian, please introduce yourself.
Well, Roger, I'm so glad to be here. For those that are tuning in, thank you for your attention. It's your time is so valuable, and I hope that I can bring value in this conversation I'm having with Roger. I really love the Bixby developer community. So I'm mindful of all of the hard work that this community does to build great technology for Bixby users. So my name is Ian Utile. I describe myself a few ways. I'm a father first, I'm a friend, I'm a futurist, and a founder. So I'm a daddy of two boys, 8 and 11 years old. We live in a treehouse in the Aptos Forest, and it is a bit of a fantasy of a life that I have with my boys and my family. I am very friendly. I've had over 100 friends live with me. I was just doing an interview with Terry Fisher from all of his different things. We're doing a voice fluencer show together, and we were talking about how I've had communes at my house over the decades. And so I'm such a friendly guy that people, they get excited about a vision of something I'm doing, and they're like, let's just live with Ian and build this thing. So I'm definitely a friend. I am a futurist. I'm not a scientific futurist. I don't look at history and make scientific predictions about what is to come. Sure do appreciate those folks. But ultimately, I am the type of futurist that has been graced with the vision to see around the corner, declare a wonderful possibility of what could be, and gravitate people around me that believe in a potential future. And then we build things to manifest a better possibility for humans and engagement with technology, et cetera. And finally, I'm a founder. I've started a lot of companies. I've never really had a job. I've been starting tech companies in Silicon Valley since I was in high school, so over 20 years. And it's what I do. It's what I know. It's what I love. It checks all the boxes for me, being an entrepreneur. So I'm very, very thankful for that. And my company that I'm solely 100% focused on right now is a company called Attention Live, where we built a sonic streaming platform, and we've just released our live podcasting app. So that's my introduction. Hope that gives a little context for our conversation.
So you're living many of our childhood dreams by living in a treehouse. It's just awesome. You know, what kid didn't build a treehouse, right? And go up there and go, hey, I'm going to live here. I'm going to get away from mom and dad and live up here. And now you're an adult, you're living in a treehouse. So that's absolutely incredible.
And to make it even more significant, I started building treehouses in the same exact area where my treehouse is at, like 31 years ago. So when I was my boy's age, I would hike up into the same Aptos Forest, and we'd build treehouses and forts. And one time I even tried to grow marijuana back there. I got scared. I never went and tended to my plants. I was a kid. I shouldn't have been doing that. That was very illegal back then. Today, it's not a big deal. But I have many memories in the Aptos Forest where my treehouse currently is at that my boys and I enjoy. We have windows on all four sides. It is amazing. Sun or shine, rain or storm. We had a crazy lightning storm recently. It was delightful. Awesome. It did start fires. That part sucked. Poor California.
Yes.
Poor California.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. It was a few, two, 3 months ago, right?
It was
a crazy morning.
I was up all night.
I was up all night
doing time lapses and videos and photos.
Oh, it was amazing. Unfortunately, it was super cool. Unfortunately, you're right. It caused a bunch of fires, but it was just such an aberrant thing for where we live in California. Talking to you from your treehouse. And so you and I were talking before this podcast. Indeed, actually, well, you were filming me and working with Terry Fisher on his voice influencer. And you and I were talking a little bit afterwards and saying, hey, we worked in tech for quite a bit. We've done a lot of different things. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about our journey through technology and what we've done and what we've seen and what we got excited about that worked and what didn't work, et cetera, there. So I'm going to ask you to start, Ian. What's your first experience with technology? When did you start playing with technology? And I use the word playing because I think we all play.
No, I think it's all play. I cannot wait to answer this question, but I am going to be sharing this podcast with my friends in my network. And Roger, they must know who you are. So please reintroduce yourself to the Bixby Developer Network for the sake of my friends that will be meeting you for the first time. Just give a little background on you and who you are, and then I'll jump into my background on tech.
Absolutely. I work as a senior developer evangelist for Viv Labs. We're the division of Samsung that's behind Bixby. Viv was actually founded by Adam Shire and Deg Kitlow, actually founded Siri. So a lot of AI and voice experience there. I've been doing that for about a year and a half, and I go out and do things like this and talk to people like Ian and talk to developers and designers and companies and get them excited to build amazing things for voice and then help them build them on the Bixby platform. But yeah, been in voice for about 3 years. I founded a startup in voice. It was maybe a tad early in 2017 to be going knocking on VC's doors to get funding, but that's okay. It was a great experience. Didn't fully work out the way I wanted to. And then I've been in tech for pretty much my entire career. I am a father. I have two teenage daughters, 16 and 14. So they keep me pretty darn busy. And I'm San Francisco Bay Area native, born and raised in the North Bay. I live in East Bay now. And I lived in San Francisco. I lived all over the place. I love the Bay Area. I think it's an amazing place, most beautiful place in the world. And just a lot of great thinking here, which really is what keeps me here, is the amazing people I meet there. So that's a little bit about me.
So I'm so glad that you shared that. Yay. You and I have a lot in common. First of all, we're friends, everybody that's listening. This is not two strangers meeting for a conversation. This is two friends. This is going to be a very friendly conversation. You are going to be able to hear our smiles. Okay. And my family has lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 10 generations. My ancestor founded San Jose, and for 10 generations, everybody's been born in the San Francisco Bay Area. So we're both raising kids here. We both are building tech companies here. It's cool how many things we have in common. You asked about my start in tech. So I'll just mention a few strong memories that guided me toward playing with technology continually. I remember when I was probably 10 years old is the first time that a neighbor had a personal computer. So about 30 years ago, I remember going to my neighbor friend's house. He's a little older than me. We played video games together, and he had a computer and he started programming. And I would just watch him for hours. I would just look at the screen and he's telling me what he's doing. And I didn't understand. It was like somebody explained Spanish or Chinese to me. But I just remember thinking, this is so cool. I did always love science fiction. And so I probably gravitated more towards Star Wars and Star Trek, which is unfortunate because I think Star Trek would have taught me more helpful things. But Isaac Asimov books, I started reading those super young. I just would rip through those things. I remember seeing movies like Minority Report's the strongest one, where you'd see Tom Cruise's character walk in the house and start talking to the house and everything starts happening. And that was about 20 years ago. And you're thinking like, wow, this is really exciting stuff. I started building websites when I was in high school, and it was always attached to a company I was starting. So I'd start a company and then I'd build a website for it. Then I got my first job at an ad agency that was really one of the first digital agencies. So they were building websites and brands and intranets, that's what we called them back then, for hundreds of, I remember my first sale was $316,000. I sold an intranet website that was private just for a semiconductor company so they could run all their operations and finances and sales before all these things were basically available today for free, which is incredible. Tech companies, I got the great benefit of having more than 1,000 clients for advertising, marketing, technology in my 20s. And that was really beneficial because I got to learn empathy. I got to figure out what is it that a B2B business owner is looking for? What are they willing to pay for? What problems is technology solving for them? And then for the tens of millions, hundreds of millions of end users that I've been able to touch either through my companies or my clients' companies, it's really helped me understand what gets people to keep paying their bills, what gets people to keep buying the hardware, what gets people to keep buying the new software, what gets people to become avid fans to up the net promoter score and all the things that are metrics for a tech company. And so during the last 20 years, I've started mostly tech companies, always with people. Never started anything on my own. And usually I'm the guy with the idea and the big mouth, right? I got an idea. So my big mouth gets people to gravitate around me and say, we want to build this idea with you. Then my big mouth gets us clients because I haven't raised money for my company. So I ask clients to be our funding, right? We will give you services or products if you will give us your money, and we will build these products around you and customize them for you. Then eventually we get to where we have products that we can scale. And so I think my journey with technology has been human. I think it's been a matter of watching movies and reading books and looking up to mentors and learning what clients need and solving problems for them, learning what their users and their customers are happy with and delighted with and frustrated with and bounce from that product or service because of, building companies and failing and failing and failing and failing. And then you got a little win, then you fail and fail and fail, and then you got a big win. That whole cycle, which not everybody ever even has a win. It's the journey that's so enjoyable for me. And it is not for the faint of heart to be a technology entrepreneur, everybody. It's not. It's not.
Truer wisdom has not been spoken. It is definitely a challenge. You got me thinking, wow. So Isaac Asimov. So that, I loved him, but I was a big fan of Arthur C. Clarke. I don't know who I like more.
Right.
Those two great science fiction authors. I was also a big science fiction reader. I think when I hear what you're talking about, you're really marketing technology and bring it to the people. And I think you said it's hard to start a company, but one of the things that I think people forget, and I'll fess up in my own startup, I didn't do a great job. Marketing is so key. Get somebody who can go out and talk to everyone and market your product, because you can build an amazing product, but if nobody uses it, you got to have someone out there to talk and market it and get to know people and get people using it. And that's such a key skill. And quite frankly, a skill that we're sitting right here in Silicon Valley, and I'd say we have great technologists, but we have a dearth of great marketers. So awesome that people like you, who's a great marketer.
Now I have to turn it around on you, Roger. Tell me about your early days in tech, the things that attracted, we have all these strong memories of devices or software experiences or our experiences in tech, but I'm genuinely interested. And there's so much more I need to know about you, Roger.
Sure.
Let me in. Tell me all about the beginnings.
I'm not about to reveal my age by telling you some things. So in high school, we had these Commodore PET computers. So these are great. You flipped them on and the only thing you could do is program. You could program BASIC in there. It would just sit there with a prompt. You'd say 10, print hello world, 20, go to 10 was the first program everybody wrote. And so we played with those. What we did, there was an old magazine called Compute Magazine that had these like hundreds of lines, these programs, and they were usually games. And you'd sit there for hours just typing in what you read in Compute. And then of course you'd play it. And of course, 90% of the time it wouldn't work. And at 10% of the time it did, it was always disappointing, but we kept on doing it. But what really got me into technology is this is kind of the early days of those arcades and video games, and the Atari system came out. And I was like, I want to program my own video games. So I sat there for hours on those computers trying to program video games, doing it in BASIC. And then we got really geeky because BASIC was too slow. So we're programming 6502 assembly to make it fast, which in some ways is the hardest core development I've done in my life when I was like 17 or 18. But ever since then, I had this interest in technology. My parents bought me some Atari home computers, and I got to play with those and spent too many late nights, bleary-eyed in the morning because I'd been up all night with it. I actually have a degree in psychology. Thought I was going to go to law school, so not a technology path. For a variety of reasons, that didn't happen. And I fell into technology, worked at it. Well, it was Anderson Consulting, now Accenture. But it was really cool because I managed to work out of the Palo Alto office, which was their R&D lab they had. So we're getting early versions of Java, right? We're using this thing called NetDynamics, which is in the scrap piles of software history. It was this early Java application server. I did a lot of really cool things there, learned a lot, and I went and I worked for a startup e-commerce consulting firm. And we're using another product called ATG, which is actually one of my favorite products of all time.
Really?
Really brilliant guys who built that. I love the team who built that. And I think they're still out there. But But I were building e-commerce sites, and I was an architect and having some fun and traveling around, and young, single, consulting life, traveling around was a lot of fun. And then I went to Gap Inc. and ended up being there for many, many years, actually. A lot of early web development, so building out their website, their presence there, a lot of internal tools. A website is no good unless you build a lot of cool tools for the internal business users to manage it. So spent a lot of time doing that. And then got more and more into not just as an architect, originally a developer and architect, more in the technology strategy side. So I spent a lot of time talking to executives and the business team, going, hey, here's your business goals. And then I was the technologist say, hey, how can we use technology to be an enabler for those business goals? And it's interesting because I'm working for this giant retailer and I'm always thinking about, hey, how do we use technology to get you to buy more? But buy more means I want you to go in the store. I want you to touch clothes. I want you to try them on. I want you to experience physical things. So I'm always looking for this technology that kind of helps, but then gets out of the way. And that's eventually really what led me to voice, is when I saw voice, and it took me a little bit of time to figure this out, but it was like, this is the best technology I've seen that helps you and then gets out of the way. And indeed enough, where I quit my good cushy corporate job, founded this startup, not quite knowing what the heck I was doing around voice, but I've been in voice ever since then. So yeah, I think technology is amazing. But like you, Ian, you talk about the people part of it. I always look at it with this kind of prism of people. Remember, I said I have a psychology degree. I love people. And so it's, let's not just build tech for tech's sake, but how can technology make our lives better and easier and simpler? And how could it make it actually us more human? Which is a big challenge because I think it's an amazing, amazing thing and empowers us, but sometimes gets in the way of us being as human as we possibly can. So how do we make that all work? Still working on that, still figuring that out.
Well, Adam Shire isn't here to answer that question. So we're just going to have to remain a mystery till we ask him.
Yeah. He is a visionary. And
he seems to always have a very articulate answer to complicated questions like that.
One of my joys in my career really has been working for Adam. I worked for Adam for about a year and a half, and he is such a visionary thought leader. And as I've said before, he's also a great people person. So he gets the people around. He elevates everyone around him to think at an elevated level. And he's already thinking at an elevated level, and he brings people along for the journey. And what a skill that is, to not only have the vision, but bring people along for it and get them to that elevated level of thinking that you're at. Hey, Ian, so talking about experience, though, I want to ask you, we've all worked with some tech or got really excited about something and say, this is going to change the world. And it fizzled out. I'm curious, over your many years, about maybe a technology or two or however many that you got all excited about, thought it was going to change the world, and then it didn't change the world or it fizzled out.
I'm so patient. I just don't believe any of it has fizzled out. I mean, I think like the LaserDisc was a disappointment for me.
Okay.
The big LaserDisc. I mean, I thought that's it. I'm bringing the movie theater experience home. I remember getting the LaserDisc of Jurassic Park when it first came out. I had big hopes for LaserDisc. So I don't know. That's one that fizzled out. I felt, back to patience, like Nuance. When I saw Nuance being used by a power user, I believe in the late 90s, and I know it came out mid-90s, late 90s for like $6,000, and I saw it being used by a power user that was really effectively using their voice. I do feel like I have, it's not fizzled out, but there was a level of surprise that a power user that could use Nuance to that level 20 plus years ago, or the way that people were able to use things like Siri when it first came out, or use Alexa when it first came out, or there's times in these cycles, right, where it it's like even better when it first happens. And you have all this crazy explosive expectation around that technology. And then it ends up not being seasons, maybe not even being years, but being decades before some of what just seems logical, like the logical progression, because tech moves so fast, but it's not always the case for the end consumer. So, but as far as any other tech that I really loved, okay, there's one thing, it's not techie, it's more a function of usage, is I was convinced we were going to have our phones strapped to our hands. So in 2014, I launched a competitor called HandSnap to PopSocket. Uh-huh. And right before PopSocket came out. And we basically attached the phone to our hand, and then it would swivel out and attach your hand, and made filming and photographs. And just, I would have it on my hand, and I was constantly using it. And I did it for years. But when PopSocket came out, that whole idea of keeping your phone attached to your hand just wasn't nearly as attractive as being able just to hold your phone easier and better and have it safer because you have this little device that's holding your phone together. So I guess in the sense of like companies that I, you know, was really excited about, like, this is it, this is going to change. We're going to sell 100 million of these devices. People are going to be able to use their phone better and take better photographs and videos. And then there's a better, cheaper product that's less intrusive with a smaller degree of change comes out. So as an entrepreneur, you can feel a certain level of, you know, well, that was kind of a bummer. My collective, the inventor, Justice Searle, his vision of this product wasn't manifest to the way that we saw it, but instead there was a better product for the market that didn't do what we thought was best, but still solved the major problem,
right,
of using your phone better. And so those are three things that come to mind. The LaserDisc, I'm heartbroken over. Voice technology, I've had to be a lot more patient than I expected. And some of the products that I have launched have not gone. The market has not responded the way that we had thought. In the case of HandSnap is one example.
Got it. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes change the world. Sometimes you're looking for a revolution, and consumers and people are looking for an evolution, I like to say, because you see that a lot.
Yes, they are.
Something there. You know, it's funny. You were talking about the initial hype, and you were talking about Adam Shire. And Adam and I used to chuckle a few times about, how do you get a great startup idea? Go find Wired Magazine from about 5 or 10 years ago. Read what they were talking about. And it's probably ready and ripe right now to go do that. Actually, I think he actually does that, as he has stacks Wired back there. And it's interesting because the hype goes and everybody gets all excited. I remember there was hype about mobile in the early 2000s. WAP. And you could do this. And I thought it was going to be super cool. And you know what? It just wasn't ready. The phones weren't there. Just wasn't there. Well, what happens 6-7 years later, right? Apple releases the iPhone. Now the phones are ready. Now the network's ready. And you can see what happened with mobile there. So it's funny. Whenever people ask me, what should I look at startup ideas? I sometimes have shared what I've chuckled to that I'm about is go find the old Wired magazines, because they're good about reporting on the latest and greatest hype. And go see if what they were talking about 5 or 10 years ago is now ready for prime time, so to speak.
But how about for you, Roger? What is some or a technology that you've had to be more patient than you expected, or you're just disappointed and heartbroken over? Maybe for you, it's the VHS tapes. You're still holding on to your 300 VHS tapes. You're not gonna stream Netflix. You don't care.
Yeah, just like you, Ian. I think sometimes it's patience, because I don't have a lot of things I think fizzled. I think they just weren't. So I actually spent a bunch of time. I was just talking about wireless, mobile, and WAP in 2000 and 2002, and going, wow, I'm going to learn this WAP programming, and I'm going to do cool things on my BlackBerry. And so I got all excited about that, and then it faded and fizzled because it just wasn't ready, but I definitely spent some time there. The other thing, and this still struggles, VR excites me, right? And there was this early web VR stuff where you could do, and you could make these kind of 3D worlds, and I remember playing with that and thinking, this is going to change the world. We can do so many cool things with this. And people like Jaron Lanier was out there and talking about it. And then it kind of died for a while, and it came back, right, with companies like Oculus. But I still feel it's that thing that it's super cool when you use it, but the total user base is pretty small. And I still think I go, well, man, you put one of those headsets on, it's like experiencing an incredibly new world and incredible and amazing. And why aren't more people doing it? Maybe because it's those headsets are kind of expensive and bulky and not the most attractive. Nobody's going to walk around with one. Maybe AR will replace it. But yeah, I still have my hopes for VR, actually. And
I really like the Oculus a lot. My boys and I play with the Oculus more when we're traveling. Mm. So even though it's right there in the treehouse and we can use it anytime, I find that it's like really, really enjoyable if we're on an adventure together. We're out traveling, staying somewhere. It definitely has more like magnetism to my children, the Oculus headset, than like the Snapchat spectacles. And so I've talked about the Snapchat spectacles a bit because I've had them for over a year. I think I've taken almost 10,000 10-second snaps, because there's a lot of days where I will capture over 10 minutes of footage and just wear them until I wear the battery out. I'll put them back in, take them back out, but I don't share any of my snaps. And they're really made, these two 4K 3D cameras that are on the new spectacles and all the microphones, they're made so that you can capture a 10-second moment in full 3D, make lots of different outputs, and post-produce with augmented reality overlaid. Well, I don't have time to even look at the videos, let alone overlay augmented reality, make something cool. It's more about, I was trying to get into the habit of what's it like to have a computer on my face. And I was hoping that the Snapchat spectacles would be a lower bar of entry for my children and for my friend network and people that I work with. But when I would give the Snapchat spectacles to somebody, they would really enjoy them the first time, and they would kind of lose interest. And I asked them to wear them again. They would, if I asked them to, go on a one wheel ride or going on a scooter ride or doing something fun. We want to capture the moment, and they'll wear them, but they don't really want to. So what they are more attracted to than these AR glasses as they are today has been the Oculus as an example. I've also tried some other just VR headsets, putting your phone in, and that doesn't have much staying power, at least for me and my kids. But I do find that a lot of people have been so drawn into the benefits of being locked into a virtual reality, or the benefits of having your world augmented, and that your reality is augmented with all these cool things overlaid. But to use it once is a fun experience. To use it multiple times takes a willingness to learn a new engagement with technology, and to use it consistently usually is for developers at this point most of the time, because most people are not quite ready, which I think we have to continue to be patient because it's a matter of time. What do you think?
I think that's one of those evolution revolution kind of questions, maybe, is people haven't gotten it. It's funny, as you're talking about the Snapchat glasses and there and cognitive. So another, I forgot all about, I was in the early bit. I signed up and got a Google Glass early.
You did.
I thought that was going to change the world, man.
Yes, I wanted one of those.
I was so excited. And they had this really pretty rudimentary way of developing for it. I developed a few things and that. And I just thought it would change the world, right? And I still love that kind of, because really that was more of an AR experience more than VR. And I still love that tech. And I don't think it's quite there, but I think that's going to come back with something a little less obvious or a little bit. There's all those crazy privacy concerns. Crazy. They're not crazy. They were legitimate.
We need to do it with these glasses right here, Roger.
Yeah. Yes.
Ian, we need gators to connect with Samsung. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we need Samsung to put, please, everybody at Samsung, all of you, I'm not begging. I'm not much of a beggar, but I'm asking you for your help. Will you please talk to Gators, G-A-T-O-R-Z, and will you please put Samsung inside Gators? These things are made of recycled aircraft aluminum. These are the greatest glasses of all time. I've been wearing these for 20 years. They bend to your face. Oh, it's like sweatpants, metal sweatpants. This is what we need, Roger. This and Samsung Bixby combined.
There we go. Vision is realized. Right. Well, that's the next great opportunity. Yeah, I love the idea of you're talking to Snapchat, like capturing your day. The problem is, and I've played around with some of these like wearable camera things. There was a startup I had and I walked around and captured, you know, like, whoa, I have 2,000 shots from the last 2 days, man. I cannot. That's where AI would be super cool to go and say, hey, I'm going to take all that content you created and I'm going to help you curate it and not make it an hours long process there. Maybe there's some synergy there, but yeah, I share your enthusiasm for something head mounted that does something. Because you know what? Talked about it. Kind of tech that's there when you want it, but gets out of the way too. I think that's a great example of it. Hey, Evan, I want to pivot a little bit and talk about voice and talk about you. When did you first start get involved with voice?
Okay, first involved with voice. Well, I started using Siri as soon as it was available. I tried to use Nuance and Dragon before that, but I never could become proficient enough to where it helped. My friends that became power users of those really early voice tech assistant type things, usually it was because they had carpal tunnel. And so their handicap is what led them to become power users. I would just watch them and marvel at, oh, these people are so good at this. I wish I could use this like that. When Amazon released their first speaker, it went for sale the Christmas of 2013. I got one of those. I remember it was right around Valentine's Day 2014 when we got it, I believe. I just remember being early. And I remember I was on a trip and we brought it with us and we had four couples with us. And we had this like Amazon Alexa speaker. I kept trying to get them to, oh, look, it tells the weather. And it, dude, what music do you want to listen to? What music? I am the hype guy for this Amazon Alexa speaker. It's blowing my mind. And I partnered with a voice tech company in 2014 that was a competitor to Sonos. And they were talking about their branding was kind of Sonos meets Amazon Alexa, but due to a lack of funding, we were never able to make a mark. And so that didn't go anywhere. But so that was probably my very first real engagement with voice tech was right around like Siri's becoming something that people could use on a regular basis. And I just try to force myself to use it. Alexa coming out with their speaker and me partnering with a company and trying to make a go of it, of bringing a different approach to the Sonos speaker, where it was all these little mini speakers that were like less than $50 that would all tie together in one room. And there was a voice interface. And it was just a cool a conference speaker. And it was just a cool all around tool. So that's probably as early back as I would say was about 5-6 years ago. And then I picked the baton back up because I was really, really busy doing market research for this company, Attention Live. And so I was pouring myself into figuring out what is it the consumers want? What is the next great platform? What is the next great application? And the more I looked, there were two things that rose above everything else to me. One was a third-party ledger verification that provided trustworthiness and automated contracts strung together. People talk about it as distributed ledger technology or blockchain. Cryptocurrency or Bitcoin is one financial application of it, but smart contracts to kind of string things together and to provide ability for decentralized autonomous communities so that communities like Facebook and Twitter could kind of regulate themselves and get around some of the censorship, shadow banning, deplatforming, et cetera. That was like 50% of my focus, like this right here, this tech. And at the same time, a few years ago, I felt like equally, not greater, not less, but equally was voice interfaces. That really, in order for the next great platform, the next great applications to truly meet the customer's demands and cause a shift, like we went from taxis to Uber and we went from hotels to Airbnb. So the way that we're going to go from social media sites like what YouTube's done with video, what Facebook's done with community, what Twitter's done with text messaging, what LinkedIn's done with community, to go from what is today to what the consumer ultimately would be willing to deal with the pain of change to switch to better technology where they can better interact with machine learning that it's safe because of these things that are in place with the central ledger tech. You really have to have a voice interface, both to speak to it and to listen to it, ultimately, in order to get people to say, oh, this is such a big step forward that we're definitely going to make a shift to this. Now, could Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn do this themselves? I sure hope so. I sure hope that they join all of us in the voice tech world and figure out how to create amazing voice interfaces so that people can use their platforms better. But I do believe, and this is why the research began very intensely 3 years ago, that ultimately what people will respond to best has not yet been built. And so there's a wonderful opportunity ahead. So that's a little bit on me on the last 6 years or so of me leaning into voice tech with Siri and Alexa speaker, and then really diving in a few years ago. You and I met at my Future of Voice event that I did inside DocuSign's headquarters in 2018. And so at that point, you know, we had over 1,000 people registered for that. Most joined us from around the world online. It was fire day. The smoke was so bad that DocuSign employees were told not to come. So I did the event for DocuSign, but none of the people showed up. Fortunately, I invited other people. That would have been unfortunate. Just me and the speakers, nobody else. But that was a wonderful pursuit. And then that got me invited to Bradley Metrock's world with all of his Alexa conference, Project Voice, and Pete Erickson with all of his voice summits, et cetera. And that's allowed me to meet you and a lot of your peers and build friendships and learn from you and do interviews. I think I've done interviews with 200 folks that are voice tech leaders or enthusiasts. So I've just been doing market research, everybody. Just been trying to find out what all the party people want.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the pain of changing. I think that's something that we forget, right? We get so caught up in voice is amazing and it's wonderful and it's a natural way to communicate with tech. But there is a pain. If I'm used to swiping or typing, you're telling me interact with my tech in a different way. Now I can go on and on, wax, you know, eloquently about how it's gonna change the world. But from an evolutionary perspective, people are gonna have to, there's a bit of a changing of your ways of, no, I pull out my phone to get the weather, I pull out my phone to get music or play a game. Oh no, you can talk. I'm just not used to that or comfortable with that. And I think it's a disease a little bit of some of us, many of us in the technology industry have, is we fall in love with the latest and greatest and forget that the common man isn't quite as attuned to that and is just living their life and things. And it's, it already works for me. Why should I use something new? It's a good question to ask. And I think to my mind, that's part of the challenge of what's happening with voice right now is breaking through and saying, hey, it can unleash some new and innovative things. And you mentioned all those companies. I would love for them to do things with voice. I'd say in voice, somebody's going to be the Facebook or the Twitter or that a voice, and it's the opportunities there. So it's a great place to be.
Well, if we're fortunate, the future will be interoperable, meaning that right. Voice assistants will go back and forth across hardware. Yes. Applications will go across back and forth across platform. Will be multimodal, meaning that it may be voice first, but there'll be TVs and computers and phones and fridges and cars that all provide a visual element to the voice interface. It will be augmented with glasses like these glorious Gators, which I hope the voice command and augmented reality comes on soon. Gators, I need to contact Gators and talk to him about this. This is I can feel its destiny percolating up in me right now. And so this is really where things are going. Things are going to go toward a interoperable world, a decentralized world, and a voice interface first, not only multimodal world that will allow people to, it's going to allow so many righteous things to be realized.
Yes. Yes. And this is why it's a great place to be, is what I like to say. Hey, Ian, you talked a little bit. Tell me a little bit more about Attention Live, exactly what it is and what you do for Attention Live, but tell me more.
Well, I'll kind of do the 1 minute elevator.
Okay. Elevator pitch. Attention Perfect. Live.
Yeah, and then you can ask me more information about specific things. So Attention Live has developed a sonic streaming platform. Our first application is a live podcasting app that allows the content creators that use our technology that's proprietary, we filed our provisional patent and whatnot, it allows them to automate distribution first. So they can automate distribution to voice devices like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, Samsung Bixby, Siri Shortcuts, Microsoft Cortana, as well as automate the broadcasting audio live, automate the distribution to social media sites like YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and others. We will be sending the archive of our broadcasts to podcast platforms like Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts. So the first thing that we're doing is we're providing automated distribution of audio broadcast, what we call live podcasting. The big, huge problem that Attention Live is solving is we are solving the problem that there's 30 million podcasts that are available today. 99.9% have not been monetized. The majority are not. The podcasts themselves and the podcasters, the people and organizations are not making money. And so we have automated monetization for content creation. Awesome. We've done this in three ways. We've done this with publishing, advertising, and community building. And so that is the big idea that we've been working on for 3 years. We finished our first proof of concept 2019 mid. We started using it regularly at events by the end of 2019 and really upped it in 2020. Then we started telling people that we built the product. We kept it very quiet because I know what it's like. For me, I'm very charismatic and I can get people very excited about something that does not quite exist yet. So I waited, but our product is now available. You can go to attn.live and you can see that our product, there's three pricing tiers. There's a free option that we'll be coming out with next year. And we're looking and currently interviewing potential enterprise clients to customize our technology around them. This is what I've always done at my tech companies. We bring on one or more enterprise clients with our V1 product, we then customize to their specific needs and the needs of their end users. And that allows us to know what needs to be built out for V2, V3, V4, as we start to map out that timeline and clarify those goals. And also our white paper is available. We spent 2 years developing this white paper. It's our declaration to the world that decentralized voice techs are better than centralized applications. And with a voice interface, that's what we're looking at. And yeah, please go to Attention Live, check it out. We have lots of information. I have a little 1 minute video that better summarizes what I just said. We have a 10 minute and 2 minute product demos if you want to see the product in action. I have another hour kind of interview that I did that I thought was fun to share. So there's just things on there. There's a form at the bottom. If you're interested in using our product, we'd love to know. If you're interested in working for our company, we've posted 8 jobs. We had over 1,000 applications that came in very quickly. And so we turned off that and we're in the process of vetting those. We're looking for a head of voice tech. This is an R&D role. It could be somebody that maybe has a computer science doctorate around voice technology, AI, ML. And so we're looking to invite some of the most brilliant people. I only want people to come work with us that are smarter and harder working than me. It may be hard to find harder working people. I'm a little manic when it comes to work. I love work so much. I love Monday mornings. They are so delightful. Sometimes Fridays are a little hard for me. I stop working. I'm going to wait 2 more days before we can keep building this thing. If you like to work with somebody like that, then you should apply to work for Attention Live. I'm actually really chill. And then the other things that are good to know about Attention Live, as far as the bottom four, we're for the first time in my technology career, over 20 years building tech companies, I'm raising money. And if somebody is interested in finding out about the opportunity to participate with us as an investor and deploy capital so that we can put that money to work and help us to scale, I believe that our company, the ambition and the possibility of what we can achieve is far too great for me to depend only on client revenue and only on my own ability to fund the company, which me and my co-founder, Landry Woolworth, who's been building companies with me for 15 years, the two of us have funded this company ourselves the last 3 years. And so, but at this point, it's a pivotal point where we're now inviting investors to participate with us. And so I have lots of investor meetings all the time, just telling people what we're doing and fielding their questions and finding out if it's a good fit for them and for us. So that's much longer than the 1 minute elevator pitch. I kind of did the 1 minute elevator pitch and then I kept going. I said,
it's a 10 minute elevator pitch. It's all good. It's all good. I always like to say content, 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 right? Content drives everything, but you're tackling two of the key problems. One is distribution. How do I get that great content out to everyone? And then two, how the heck do I monetize that content? So now question for you about Attention Live. Is this something, if I go to Attention Live and can I sign up, is this something where if I want to share my content out to live stream to Twitter or YouTube and that, is that something where I do it? Is there an app? Do I do it through the browser or how does that work?
Yeah, so because we're so focused on a voice interface, ultimately we want people to primarily use our product, not touching this device. And so we're not right there for the listeners. They just talk to a voice device and they can listen. For the content creators, they still do need to use our progressive web app. So we built a PWA. Our web app works seamlessly across every software and every hardware. It doesn't matter if it's a, it doesn't matter what it is, phone, tablet, computer, even other unique interfaces will work. Software, it doesn't matter if it's if you're a Windows person or an Android or an iOS person, our software works seamlessly across all hardwares. As far as people using it today, the best thing to do is to go to Attention Live and to sign up to be one of our private beta users. We're going to be rolling out our free product to the world Q2 next year, but we'll be allowing certain beta users to get private access before then. We'll be rolling out our paid product Q1 next year. Our target date is February 1st, 2021. We're going to have a huge, big global live podcasting challenge where I'll be teaching people that are using the product live in real time exactly how to live podcast best and get the most out of your content by using our curation, our AI curation tools to cut up to micro content and post. But right now, my focus is interviewing the potential enterprise clients and picking one or more of those to truly customize our platform around their specific content monetization strategy. And if they need help with a strategy, fortunately, our internal team is very capable, as well as our peers and our friends that we're able to lean on to provide that strategy for them.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to have to go check it out, because actually, if anyone has out there has tried to do things like live stream to YouTube with existing tech, it is a pain in the rear. You get down like on a Mac, you download, you got OBS, which is this incredibly complicated program. It has more knobs and levers and dials than pretty much. And all your time, I'm like, I just want to stream my video to YouTube. And then you connect it all up and things. And so, man, if you can make that simpler, that is a multi million dollar idea, because I think there's so much content being created. So kudos.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this last thing on what you just said in terms of ease of use. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we are hoping to solidify is a strategic partnership or at least a better integration into Zoom's API. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can go live on Zoom by video on either Facebook or YouTube. If you want any more functionality, you have to use Restream.io or there's some Livestream. There's so many of these different softwares. But you really need a professional to use them. We would love to see a third option where you can live stream through Attention Live. Mm-hmm. And this will allow people to live stream through our application, our product, our technology through Zoom as the interface everywhere with their voice at one time. And then we do a lot around other, there's other elements I'm not going to confuse the Samsung Bixby developer network with right now. But if you do any research on Attention Live, you'll see that I've only scratched the surface on the deep tech advancements that we have made with our product. So I encourage you to go and hunt and find what I'm talking about regarding things outside of just the voice tech that I've mentioned.
Awesome. Well, sir, I got the marketer to come out on you. But go check it out, Attention Live. No, yes. I'm excited about what you guys are building. Hey, I want to pivot a little bit back to voice and just ask you, and we've been touching on this a little bit, what's your opinion of where voice is right now? Of what's working? Where is it not working? So
well, voice is in the terrible twos as a child, right? Voice is not an adolescent by any means. And so with the terrible twos, you and I both had two kids. You have some similarities there, right? It's so wonderful. There's so many things about having a two-year-old that are just, oh, they're becoming a human. They're becoming a person. They're like really starting to stand on their own two feet, walk around and eat food on their own. And they love you. And when they love you and they hug you and they say, I love you, daddy, it's they really love you. And there's like all these incredible elements. And then there's all of the negative aspects of dealing with that age human. In the same way, I think that we have some things that would be so easy for us to celebrate with voice technology as it is today in 2020. But oftentimes, I think we are a cynical environment, prone to cynicism and focusing on what's broken, what's not working correctly. And so I think a lot of the chatter is around how things could be better. And that is a good thing, because that will allow people to start thinking through, what does it take to get this technology? It's not in diapers anymore. You know, now it's, or maybe diapers a little bit too, right? But it's not like, it's not so dependent on the parents, right? You don't have to pick it up, and it's just different. It's a different development, but it's not yet an adolescent, right? It's not fully potty trained. It's not able to go play on its own and be self-sufficient for hours at a time. It does not automate your life. It's not the personal assistant that we thought we'd have by now, where there's a lot of things that are missing. It's not, things are not tied together. Certain apps don't work on certain platforms. There's all sorts of issues. We're all aware of these things. And so all of us in the voice tech industry are working to either encourage one another to solve these problems, or are trying to solve these problems ourselves. And so that's my view of voice tech today, is I just think of it as, you know, just a little kid that just needs to be loved. Just got to be patient with the little kid. Eventually the kid's going to be an adolescent, then a teenager. What happens when voice is a teenager?
Oh no, I have two teenage daughters. I'm afraid then I'm experiencing that right now. But that's a great analogy, actually. I love that. That's one of the better analogies I've heard. It's the terrible twos. It's so rewarding, and yet it's so challenging at the same time. And you're absolutely right. It has to grow up, and it will. It happens with all kinds of technology. So, Ian, if I told you to rub your crystal ball, and you said you're a futurist, so let's say voice in 5 or 10 years, you choose the time frame. What's it going to be like in 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I'm going to say this to people. Everybody's a futurist. Now, some have honed the futurist muscle. Nobody is Nostradamus. Nobody knows the future. Some of us have honed the futurist muscle. We've learned how to follow our intuition and whatnot. But everybody is a futurist. Every human. The thing that makes humans different than every other animal on Earth is that we have an ability to project a better future and build toward that future. We are all futurists. We are all entrepreneurs developing things that do not exist. So just to be clear, I'm not some special futurist. I'm just a human, one of 7.5 billion people that have an ability to think creatively about what could be and declare that to you. As far as where I think, I try to think of the future. I try to humanize it. So I say, okay, when my kids are 18 and 21 in 10 years, how will they use voice? And in the same way that a person imagines sinking a shot if they're a basketball player, or nailing that goal if they're a hockey player, and they imagine it going in, right? They have to humanize, they have to go through that vision. So my vision, when I think of the future, is how my kid's going to use it. And so I look at how my kids use it today, and I project that my children in 10 years might use it differently than you and I. But what it will be is that they will have interoperable voice assistant, and it won't be called Bixby, Siri, Alexa, or Cortana. It will just be their voice assistant. They'll have a name for it. It might even sound like my voice, or their mother's voice, or one of their grandparents' voice, because that's what comforts them most. I believe the voice assistant will be their psychotherapist. Right now, our generation goes and we pay $100 to go sit down with a psychotherapist, which sounds like a dangerous term, but it's just really just a person with a master's degree in psychology that allows them to sit on a couch and listen to you talk about your problems and try to help you work through things for your mental health. Well, I believe that my kids, their mental health will have a sense of development over their ability to privately communicate with this personal assistant and fill that gap. I believe my kids will accomplish in 6 minutes what takes us 6 months today to do. If you or I have a great idea, we have to go through all this process of ideation, of branding, building websites, building designs, launching something, trying to get people to pay attention to it, trying to build events around it. And 6 months later, you finally are at market. My kids, your kids in 10 years, they will have an idea and they will just simply tell the voice assistant to build this idea, get the social media sites, use this photo in my phone, use this video on my computer, write this copy. They'll see it on their TV or their car, some multimodal device. It won't matter what hardware they're using. It won't even be about the software. It'll be like electricity. You turn electricity off and on, your voice interface will just be like that. It'll be like running water. It's just something that the first world have the ability to use. I do believe the most important thing 10 years from now, more than everything else I've said, mm-hmm. is what voice as an interface will do for the most impoverished people in the world. Right now, there's 2.5 billion people that don't have internet. I think it's over that number that make less than $2.50 a day. Many of these people cannot read, they cannot write. Some of these people are blind, they cannot see a screen. Right. And so you're talking about an ability that when Musk puts enough satellites in the air and Bezos sends out enough computer rings or computer watches or computer fingernails, and when that happens and the hardware is readily available to the two-thirds world, it's not the third world, it's actually the two-thirds world that's impoverished and not living this graced lifestyle that you and I and our peers and our friends and our region gets to live, or our nation and other nations that have been graced to be developed to the extent we have. These folks, two-thirds of our planet, are going to have an ability with voice interface to actually provide tremendous value to humans. People in jungles will start to be able to tell people how they raise kids, how they farm, how they hunt, stories about their parents, their ancestors. And we will start to be entertained by the collective world. In 10 years, people in far off areas that just have an internet connection and this some hardware device, they'll be using software like Attention Live to document their life and make that documentation in their own native tongue available to hundreds of other tongues, like English, where you and I can hear this person tell this amazing story about where they barely survived this one hunt or whatever it may be. And we will have a complete revolution with the decentralized ability for people to both consume and create content at scale and be compensated automatically based on the way that content is used, and be able to benefit the content creator as a consumer in a one-to-one way where you know where this is going. Everything that is problem with the music industry today, all the things that Kanye West and Taylor Swift and others are talking about that's broken in the music industry, we have a chance with the voice tech industry to solve in the next 10 years. Because we can help content creators better create their content on decentralized platforms with a voice interface and automate the process of making money from their creations. And we can help content consumers listen to content on any device, any software, in the time they want, in the way they want, and be able to directly benefit the content creator that they are thankful for in a way that we've never fathomed before, because decentralization and the speed of a voice interface changes all this, because now we can do things at the speed of speech. That is what we think. What do you think?
Well, I think that's an awesome, actually, when you paint that vision, especially, and I love the term two-thirds of the world, two-third world, that's what gets me excited and energized to be in this industry. Because I said, I like to change the lives of people. And I think what you're talking about is saying, we're trying to empower that anyone, anywhere, in any economic situation, can both create and consume content and share that, share their lives with the world and consume content and understand the rest of the world. What a grand vision for kind of unlocking and really tackling poverty and so many challenges in the world. We talk about education, but if we can use this as a technology that, because everyone can talk, right? Or most, okay, there's people who can't, but we all, it's our very first way of learning to communicate. And so it's the most natural way. And by using that as a way to talk to our technology, it takes away all that friction of the technology, right? Of how to learn how to use it. And we've seen you can put it in pretty cheap devices, right? And so now you take some of that economic friction away, and now you empower just the world to go create and consume content and be educated and elevate themselves. And I'm just, as you were talking, I was imagining, and I took a trip into the Brazilian rainforest last year, an amazing place. If you haven't been there, gotta go, right? Back post-COVID. But
I'll go with you.
Yeah, oh, awesome. Oh, man, dude, I know exactly. We had a talk. I know exactly the guys to talk to. But imagine some guy native in the rainforest, right? You meet, they really have very little access to technology, but they live these amazing lives, and lives that are so rich and so full of stories and information and everything that we have no idea about. If they could share that, that would be amazing for them and make some money, right? And help them elevate that And then they could learn about the outside world. Wow, I get super excited about that. So I absolutely love that vision, Ian.
Can I add one thing? One thing that we don't talk about in our industry are mute and deaf people. I think I have never talked about mute and deaf because I don't know how that would be like. And I don't know how to communicate the possibilities for them in the voice tech world. But let me just say this. The voice tech world may not have a direct impact on mute and or deaf people the way that we can for blind people. Okay, that's obvious. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, the beauty of a voice interface is that every time a human uses Bixby and Alexa and Siri and Cortana, etc., assistant, these machine learning algorithms, this what we call artificial intelligence, is becoming better, smarter, more accurate. Mm-hmm. Now, what this means for people that cannot speak or people that cannot hear. Now, if they're mute and deaf, then it's not going to be the same impact. But for those that can't speak and can't hear, because those of us that are so fortunate to have fully functioning ability to hear and speak are using our voice interface with machine learning, this machine learning is going to become smarter and better capable of serving the whole world, including people that are just mute or just deaf. Because if you are deaf, you can now still see everything with your eyes with this advanced and elevated artificial intelligence machine learning. And as you see things with your eyes, you then can have the ability to type faster, right? Because now you don't have to, you have different things going on because it's interactive that way, right? If you can't hear, then you can still speak, right? So again, you see things with your eyes on a multimodal device, and now all of a sudden you can still speak. Or maybe that we have a thing with augmented reality with sign language, right? The sign language interface with machine learning becomes reality because those of us with a voice and ears used it enough so that the machine learning could get advanced enough so that those that don't have the ability to hear can, at least if they can't speak, they can use sign language, and there's some sort of, you know, augmented reality overlay that allows them to communicate with the machine. Now, we don't talk about this very often because I'm worried I'm going to say something wrong, or I'm going to say some application wrong, and I don't have a lot of mute and deaf people that I'm around. I'm around more people that are deaf than mute, and that gives me the ability to still communicate with them at a certain level. But I do want to say, for those out there that are mute or deaf, I believe that our industry is going to help you and folks like you to better interact with technology. It just might take a little bit longer, but please cheer us on. Because as you cheer us on, as you cheer on Samsung Bixby developers, you are helping us, you're putting gas in our tank and helping us to go for it and to develop these better interfaces, voice interfaces, so that the machine learning and the artificial intelligence, what we call Alexa or Siri or Assistant or Cortana or Bixby, these are going to get better. And as they get better, there'll be new interfaces like sign language interfaces and interfaces that are better with keyboards and interfaces that are better multimodal screens. And it will ultimately help you and your peers to use tech better. It just might take a little more time, but we haven't forgotten about you. We know that you're there. We just don't necessarily know how to talk about how we're going to help, because it almost feels dangerous or insensitive, or we don't really know what to say. It's hard to show empathy because we don't even have that many people around us that are experiencing some of the hardships and hurdles that you could get to experience. And we also don't look down on you or feel bad for you because you're fully capable as a human, just like anybody else. You just have something that's different in your life. And so we also don't want it to sound or seem we are trying to save you. And so I think because of all those things, we don't talk about how what we do may help you, but it is real. And we are going there. And I just wanted to say that because I've never heard anybody say it. I've thought it from time to time, but I never really felt comfortable talking about it because I might say something wrong.
No, that was well. I think it strikes me, you're talking about AI empowering and enabling inclusiveness. And that's just really amazing. And I think you're right, because voice, when I type, or I swipe, I'm talking computer. I had to learn how to type. I had to learn how to swipe. I had to learn how to use that technology. But when I use my voice really the problem is not me learning what I speak. It's the computer understanding what the heck I'm saying, understanding human way of communicate. So it may be voice now, but using AI to understand human communication then can drive inclusiveness because, wow, what a cool idea. As you were talking, I was like, what a cool idea if I was watching a video and I could turn something on and all of a sudden some AR superimposed thing of somebody doing sign language, what was happening would be there right now. Because right now, okay, you can see subtitles and that, and there's some solutions there. But if you made that incredibly easy to whatever way you best as an individual communicate, right? Whether you have all your senses, and even people have all their senses. Sometimes people hear better than see. We all have that. But people who have a challenge in one or more of their senses, let's use the technology to take communication method A and enable people who can't understand A, but I can understand B. Let's use AI to drive B. Wow. That's a powerful vision. I love it. I haven't heard anyone say that. And I think there's such an amazing opportunity. And I'm getting...
Roger, did you know that you're a gold digger? You dig the gold out of me, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't... Gold digger, that sounds bad. You're saying gold digging all the good, in the good ways of there.
Only in the good ways. Only in the good ways. I'm just saying you bring the best out of the people that you interview. You are great at what you do. Everybody that's been on your podcast, including Terry, who was just on it, they speak highly of you as a person. They speak highly of this podcast as a platform for them to come into a safe, long-form conversation space and have these genuine, authentic, friendly conversations. And you ask questions and create an environment that allows people like Terry Fisher and myself and your other guests to have enough room to breathe, to start thinking through and verbally processing some of these dreams and having a safe enough space to feel like we can take a risk in something we've never said before, but we've been kind of percolating on and thinking about things. So I salute you, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ian. I always say it's just a couple guys or a guy and a gal having a beer, talking, but we're recording it.
That's right.
All doing it virtually because we're in COVID times, but you know, it's a little bit that, and that's the way I like to make it casual, but also enough time for people to articulate. So thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, before we wrap up, I want to ask you one of my favorite questions. So what are a couple of voice experiences that you use that you really like and why?
That's a good question. I really have always liked Siri, even though it's just super, super, super frustrating. But again, it's the two-year-old kid and it's stayed two for a long time. But I love Siri. I've used Apple system for about 15 years. And I do use a lot of Android and Windows hardware and software, but Apple is my ecosystem. I have like 50,000 contacts in my phone. I have multiple calendars that are almost always full.
You're the only one. I have 50,000. I actually believe you have 50,000 contacts in your phone, Ian.
I am very friendly, everybody.
Yes.
I am very friendly.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And Siri, regardless of all of its frustrations, is a tool that has automated a lot of my life in a really, really water-like, electricity-like way. Where I forget I'm using Siri. Mm-hmm. I do use Alexa natively and Assistant natively. I've used Cortana and Bixby. I really like Bixby. I think Bixby's probably my favorite of all five. I love what Bixby's done for the developer community. I feel like when I talk about Bixby's users, I think of the developers as the first users. Mm-hmm. And I feel like your team has created an environment where I love watching like your weekly YouTube updates on Bixby developers. So for those of you that are not watching the YouTube updates on Bixby developers YouTube page, you should. It is so refreshing to watch a personal assistant being used by a power user. It is so exciting to see somebody go through 10 or 30 different commands, basically try to show how it could be used well and used better. And to be like, oh, that's possible. That is so awesome. I want to use it like that. I got to get better at using the Siri shortcuts, or in your case, the Bixby capsule. So As far as one app, I don't feel like there's ever been one app that's had staying power. So I'm hesitant to praise one app because no app has staying power. And the one that, or two or three that I'm most excited about today may not remain in the future. So what I will just say is I really have a lot of honor for all five major platforms. I am amazed at what Houndify can do. I'm amazed at what some of the other companies like John Foster's, I think it's called Akito, can do. I'm amazed at the tech that MC Hammer showed me that he and his team are working on. If you guys don't know, MC Hammer's made like over 100 tech investments into the most well-known tech companies in the world when they were angel, when they're just doing their angel round. He showed me some tech a couple years ago. We were together for 4.5 hours. I almost told him he could have my company. Don't tell him I said that because I don't want him to ask me about that. But I was that caught up in what he was showing me. I'm like, I was going to say, Hammer, I'll work for you. I am so excited about this because he showed me some tech that was like a dream of what things could be like in 5 years with voice tech. So there, it's not just the five major players. There's a lot of people working on great tech. And when I see something that is either being done better, it makes me feel like hope for where we're at and where we're going. And when I see something that's really futuristic and far advanced, even if it is kind of a house of cards, minimal viable product, proof of concept, it still provides that carrot that we're all running after to create great things that will help people forget about the fact they're using technology at all.
It's interesting. One of the great things about where we are with this tech is everybody's rooting for everyone. So glad I work for Samsung, I work in Bixby. I love reading about things that Amazon's doing or Google's doing. And man, am I rooting that Apple, please release a developer toolkit and unleash Siri.
Yes,
please. I use both phones. I've been an iPhone user for a long time. I use Siri too. They started with kind of the shortcuts. Unleash that thing. And all these independent things you're talking about, everybody, it's a big race to a big win for everyone, and all advancements are welcome. And I'm as big a fan of what everyone is doing in the industry as anything we're doing. So I get excited too over that. Hey, Ian, you're an amazing advocate, I'm going to say, for tech and humanity.
Oh,
in combination,
so kind. Wow.
For tech empowering humanity, and extremely articulate about that. And it has been so much fun. We probably could talk for another hour or two. But for the sake of my podcast listeners, I think we should wrap it up. But thank you for being a guest today. It's been super interesting and thought intriguing. And I hope everyone enjoys the conversation. Thanks, Ian.
Wow, that was so amazing, Roger. That was such a great conversation. There's so many things I never was able to say at all. And there's a bunch of things I was never able to say and felt good about the way it came out that I was today. Yay, bro. You're awesome. You created something great. And it's not because it's Samsung, the social proof behind it. It's because you fostered something that's you. And you're creating something that really, really provides value to me and all of your and my friends and peers in this industry. So I hope that you feel encouraged by the things said to you today. And I hope that you know that even though I encourage everybody all the time, I actually genuinely mean it.
Well, thanks, Ian. Yeah, you are very encouraging and a bright beacon of light for the industry. And it's always fun talking to you. But I want to say thank you.
Yes.
So that's all from my amazing conversation with Ian Utile. For the next podcast, which will be our end of the year podcast, I'm going to do something a little different and something that sounds pretty darn exciting. You'll have to tune in mid-December when I release it to see what I do. Then we'll take a little bit of a break and I'll start up the podcast again in mid-January. And that's all, folks. Till the next podcast, mid-December. This is Roger Kibbe from the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast, signing off.